the NROEC, and I think I'm co-chairing this session with Aftab Siddiqui, the chair of the ASOAC, and I'm sure if you don't know the difference between those, then you will by the end of the session. Would we like to do some introductions? Yeah, let's do some introductions. Starting with...
I will start. My name is Hartmut Glaser. I am one of the LACNIC members in the Address Council appointed by LACNIC board.
Kevin Bloomberg from the Aran region, ASOAC.
Ricardo Patara, ASOAC member from LACNIC region.
I'm Alan Barrett, CEO of AFRINIC.
Axel Pavlik, Managing Director of IBNCC.
Dmitry Burkov, REPC board member, here just as observer. Thank you.
Oscar Robles, CEO of LACNIC.
Ron De Silva, board. And Akinori sends his regrets. He flew back already. I'm one of the two ASO appointed members on the ICANN board.
Carlos Reyes, ICANN staff support.
Phyllis Dielmas, ASOAC RIPE region.
Narana Nimpuno, ASOAC from the RIPE region.
Aftab Siddiqui, ASOAC member from the APNIC region and ASOAC chair for 2018.
Hervé Clément from the ASOAC and appointed by the executive board of the RIPE NCC.
Hi, Louis Lee, ASOAC member elected in the Aran region.
Thank you. Let's hear from the back of the room as well.
Susanna Gray, NRO Secretariat.
Yul Fussing is dropping in from the GNSO.
Dan Dahlberg, Technical Director of Research Science at BitSight Technologies.
Joyce Chen, ICANN-OG.
Rosalia Morales, part of LACNIC board.
Craig Ng, APNIC General Counsel.
Germán Valdez, NRO Secretariat.
Michael Abejuela, Aran Council.
Paul Anderson, Chair of the Aran Board.
Eduardo Jiménez de Arechaga, LACNIC's Legal Counsel.
Thank you, everyone. So we have potentially a maximum of two guests who are not actually employed by ICANN or the RIR. So, welcome. Thanks for your interest. Let's give them all. Okay, the agenda today is a policy update from Aftab as the ASOAC chair, followed by an NRO update from myself. What else do we have? An ASO review update? Are we doing that again? Take it away, after.
Thank you, Paul. We'll try to do something different, a little bit different. So starting with... thank you, Carlos. You go with the... Who's going to move the slides? Oh, you have... Okay, that's good. Perfect. So we'll start with the policy update. As you know, that we have... five RIRs, all those. Yep, we are consist of three members each from each RIR, so that makes us 15 in total. We have different tenures, different terms of office as respect to the different RIRs. Our responsibilities are very. The scope is very limited. What we do and how do we meet? We meet once a year physically, like in an ICANN community forum event, and then monthly on a telephonic call. So Next slide, please. This is the formation you heard from most of us. 10 ASOAC members are here at the moment. Two are performing their other duties as we appoint multiple people to different committees and working groups. So, and some couldn't make it, and they are, I guess, online on the bridge. So we are here. I have with me two vice chairs, so that is Kevin Bloomberg and Ricardo Patara. So this is our formation. Next slide, please. We have a PPFT team. It is called Policy Proposal Facilitator Team to support the global policy development process. The names are here from every region, one member from each region. Next slide, please. As I said, ICANN activities we do, we have appointed two people on the CCWG accountability stream too. That's Fiano Sanga from AFRINIC and Jorge Villa from LACNIC, NOMCOM, Brajesh Chan. ITHOS Award selection panel is Kevin Bloomberg. I saw an email from the CCWG accountability stream too that they have published the final draft. So, and it's under review. And probably their work will be completed in June something, as updated by in the earlier session. Anyway, moving forward. Well, that's the NRO Executive Council. Paul will explain that in my slide. I don't have to do that. Next slide, please. So we have five RIRs, and every RIR has their own policy development process. And we do the policy development in the RIRs. And in APNIC region, I'll be presenting the update from the APNIC and region, and my other colleagues will present the update from their region, respectively. So since Copenhagen ICANN 58, we had two APNIC meetings, APNIC 44 in Taichung and APNIC 45 in Kathmandu, Nepal last month. So in these two meetings, we had total eight policies. Six were related to IPv4 predominantly. It's still in the APNIC region. Most of the policies are based on IPv4. Two were related to IPv6, and no other topic, no other policy was discussed, which caters any other topic. The status of those policies are: four were approved, and four are still under discussion. Next slide, please. So this is these are all the names of policies. As I said, predominantly it's IPv4 related, and talking about the last /8 block in the APNIC region. One was the most important one is we have put a limit of 5 years to transfer any IPv4 address space if you have got it from /8. So if you have received a /8 block that is a /22, then you won't be able to transfer it for next 5 years. You have to wait for 5 years before you can transfer it. This was a major change in the policy in APNIC region. Returned IPv4 address management and final /8 exhaustion, it was also approved. Some policies are still under discussion, like no need, temporary transfers, final 8 pool exhaustion. And the two IPv6 policies were quite simple, as it is just a matter of following other regions as well. That's it. These are the policies from the APNIC region. And I would like to... No, what is the next slide, please? So I would like to request Ricardo Patara to give a brief overview of the policies from the LACNIC region. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Aftab. This a summary of this is a summary of some policies that we had in LACNIC 28. It was last September. And also some of the proposals that will be presented during LACNIC 29 to happen, to be in May the 1st in Panama. In total, we have 10 policies. None of these policies proposals are for IPv4. Some of them are for IPv6 and other topics like transfers, point of contacts in the WHIS database. Next slide, please. These are the proposals. There is one in discussion, still in discussion, presented a long time ago, some time ago, is to allow inter-region transfer, but in the inbound direction, so organization outside LACNIC region could transfer IP address, IPv4 address to organization inside of the region, so coming inside to the region. This one is under discussion. The next one, to modify the resource recovery process. In LACNIC, there is a recovery process. So organizations with some issues, be it administrative issues or utilization issues, can have their resources recovered. And this one is to allow LACNIC to remove the DNS delegation in case a set of IP address is in the recovery process. This one is approved. The next one is interesting in this case, in this scenario, in the group, is to change the last call period for the PDP. It was 45 days, changed to 30 days. So after the policy proposal was approved in the forum, there will be 30 days for last comments in the mailing list. Modify the initial IPv6 allocation to end users is to allow an initial allocation for end user organization to be changed so they can change the prefix. This considering case where the initial plan was not very good, accurate. So this allow this type of organization to return to LACNIC to request a different prefix in the IPv6 allocation. The next one, modify subsequent allocations, was just to adjust some of the requirements for additional allocation, considering a modification that was approved in previous forums. The next one is a little bit complicated because it was tagged as a global policy. This one will be first presented during the next LACNIC meeting. The auto is still getting comments from the public, from the community, to see if they really want to proceed as a global proposal. The idea is to create a global internet register to allow organizations to request address to this organization instead of the RIRs in the case they are present in more than one region. Next one, update to merge and acquisition transfer policies to block a subsequent transfer after a set of address was transferred based on merge and acquisition. Next one, IPv-based geolocation. The idea of the auto is to instruct LACNIC to publish a set of information to allow anyone to identify the geographic location of not only the allocation, but also the sub-allocations inside of the block. And next one, review errors in IPv6 policies, is basically to adjust the text for justification for additional allocation in IPv6. It's the way LACNIC would measure efficient usage of the previous block. And the final one, registration validation of abuse contacts. The idea of auto is to instruct LACNIC to have process to verify the validity of abuse contacts and how to deal with abuse contacts not working properly. I think that's it.
So thank you, Ricardo. After that, Louis Lee will present the...
Hi.
Aaron.
Oh. I'm Louis Lee. This is Louis' hat up here. How are you? So the
Aaron policies, I'm going to cover the ones that had activity in the last 12 months from since last March. We will have a meeting next month in Miami. And we'll cover 11 policies, five of which had to do with V4 only. There are none just V6, but there is a policy that covers V4 and V6 or directly affects the V4 and V6. And there are five other topics. They vary about POC validation. That's point of contact validation, affects how who is displayed, things like that. Of these, seven have been approved or implemented or approved to be implemented, and four of them are under discussion. So of the adopted proposals, you can see the four displayed up there. The first one has to do with improved IPv6 registration requirements. While it says IPv6, it's actually about how the WHOIS registration is required for updating. It makes it easier. It makes it so that a V6 block size you would use for a network, that you have a V4 block size, the requirements match up for WHOIS registration. Now, the second one about alternative simplified criteria for justifying small IPv4 transfers, that one just adds a simple criteria for organizations to transfer with IPv4. The third one, streamline merger and acquisitions transfers, that has to do with both V4 and V6, in that this policy makes it simpler for an organization to consolidate the registration of a number of resources that comes from a merger and acquisition under a single organization. And the last one that was adopted, it's to change time frames for IPv4 requests to 24 months. Now, what that does is it extends the time horizon for which an organization may request and receive IPv4 addresses for the duration of their expected growth. Oh, of course, the comprehensive list is posted online at aaron.net/policy/proposals. Thank you. Next one. So we have three policies that have already been recommended for adoption. These three, the first one under the policy manual section 3.6, it affects how the annual WHOIS point of contact validation happens. In that it, whoops, my notes just flipped. Sorry, just a moment. Oh, so it clarifies what type of POCs and for what kind of organizations would be validated and by what procedure. The second one is the amend community networks. What that does, then, it widens the definition of community networks so that they can be included for those for that use other governance or operating models. And the last one that is recommended for adoption is the repeal of immediate need for IPv4 address space. This removes a policy under which an organization may justify for IPv4 addresses because the conditions in the post-runout time no longer exist. All right. Now, there are four policies that are still under that are still draft, means they're open for discussion. You may participate via the mailing list or attend an Aaron meeting. And these four are, the first one is the clarification for initial block size for IPv4 ISP transfers. What it does is that it removes inconsistency for size of IP block that may be transferred, just inconsistency in the manual. The second one, require new POC validation upon reassignment. Now this one, it makes IP reallocation or reassignment, which is usually from ISPs to customers, contingent on the POC validation for any new POCs that were created. It seeks to improve the accuracy and of the contact information reflected in WHOIS. The third one, remove Aaron review requirements for large IPv4 reassignments / reallocations. So it removes the Aaron reviews of these large block reallocations and reassignments again, for ISPs to customers, because the author of this proposal asserts that the ISPs understand that IPs are scarce and would not give out large blocks that are too big for their customers. And the last one, allow inter-region ASN transfers. Now, this one adds autonomous systems as numbers, as resources that can be transferred between Aaron and another region. Now, there is one more editorial change that came about from a draft policy. It's a big cleanup to clean up all the references in the policy manual for allocation, assignment, reallocation, reassignment, and to match the updated definitions that are easier to understand. So that concludes my report.
Thank you, Louis. So next in line is Efrenik. So may I request Fiona? Fiona, to give a quick overview of the Efrenik policies. And also, if you can give a quick intro of yourself.
Starting with the intro, for the record, this is Fiona Songa, ASO representative from the Efrenik region. Apologies for coming in late. I was concluding on another meeting. I'll quickly go into the update from the Efrenik region. Over the last 1 year, we've discussed a total of 8 policies, 2 on IPv4. We've had 0 policies on IPv6, and we've had 6 policies developed on other topics. And the status of those policy proposals are that we've got one that went for ratification to the Efrenik board. We've got 4 still under discussion, and we've got 3 that were withdrawn by the authors for various reasons. Next slide. If we can now focus on of the policies that we had, the 5 that are still moving forward, there is 1 for ratification and 4 still under discussion. So we have the soft landing BIS policy, which is basically a review of our current soft landing policy that is enforced. And this was to change the way that we're going to handle the allocation of the remaining IPv4/8 that is in the region. And this policy was sent to the board. Then there was an appeal, and it is, I think, we're waiting for the direction from the board. So we're putting it under discussion because there was an appeal from part of the community. So depending on how the board decide, then we'll know where it will have a final position for it. Then the next is the LEM delegation policy proposal. LEM delegation in Africa reverse DNS. Basically, for those who may not be so technical, this is to enable us to remove LEM delegation records or records of misconfigured DNS from the Efrenik database. And this is still under discussion. And we've had it, it's not yet moved to it moved to last call, actually. Then it went back to the list for discussion. Then the next policy proposal is on the root aggregation. It's a root aggregation policy. Excuse me. And this policy basically sets to set limits on additional resource allocation for the LRIs, and it is still under discussion. The next policy is the Internet Number Resource Review Policy. And that policy also looking at it in terms of IPv4 address space. So the next policy, which is the Internet number resource review policy, also really much focused around conversations on IPv4, sets to allow for there to be investigations on or regular controls on how IPv4, internet numbering resources as a whole are used, so that there isn't any of what the community feel is stockpiling or other types of abuses on IP address space. Then we've got a policy proposal that is looking at improving the policy development process, and that is also under discussion. So in summary, that is basically the status of ongoing policy discussions, and we welcome everybody to participate in these conversations. Thank you.
Thank you, Fiona. And the last one is RIPE NCC region. Rani Napana. Go ahead, Brajesh.
I just wanted to understand, Fiona, this appeal, due to appeal, what does it mean actually?
What that means is that the policy went to last call. It went to last call both in the discussion, the first-to-first discussion at the AFRINIC meeting, and then on the mailing list. The chairs concluded we had a consensus on a last call, but some of the community members felt that that consensus was not achieved and feel that the policy should not proceed, and so put in an appeal. But it was already at the next stage, which was for the board to ratify. And so when it is on appeal, because we've never had a situation where we have a policy proposal in our region at that level, so we, as a community, we are now waiting for direction from the board. Maybe Alan can add more to that.
Yeah, let me try to clarify that. So there was a proposal that went through discussion, all the usual process. Right at the end, after the last call, the working group chairs declared consensus. There was an appeal. The appeal committee has published a finding that said that the appeal is upheld, which basically means that the appeal committee says that the working group chairs were wrong. They should not have declared consensus. The working group chairs sent a clarifying message to the mailing list, I think it was today or maybe yesterday, saying that they acknowledge the result of the appeal process, and therefore the request for the board to ratify is rescinded, and so formally now the policy is back under discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alan and Fiona, for the clarification, and thank you, Prajesh, for raising it. Now back to our cycle, RIPE NCC.
Thank you very much. I have a very brief update from the RIPE region. So the RIPE NCC is the regional internet registry, and the community itself is called the RIPE community. This is an update from the last two RIPE meetings. I should point out, however, as described by my previous speakers, the policy development happens in slightly different ways depending on the region. And the policies might vary from region to region. In the RIPE community, you don't actually need a RIPE meeting to reach consensus on a policy. This can happen on the mailing list. So, but the update itself is from the last two meetings. So we had not that many policy proposals over the last year. I think the year before there were a lot more discussions, especially on the final IPv4 address pool. So three IPv4 proposals, one IPv6 and one other. And I'll describe those on the next slide. So the first proposal was simply actually a proposal to gather all the different transfer policies that had been developed over the last couple of years and put them in one single document. It's very practical, but not necessarily a very exciting proposal, so it's a little bit more of a, housework, really. What was interesting was at the same time, There were two proposals on how to handle the last IPv4 address pool, which were more or less opposing each other. So one looking at a more liberal way of addressing the final IPv4 pool, and one that was looking at reducing the initial allocation that you'd get as a way of extending the IPv4 address pool lifetime. There was very heated and passionate discussions on both of those. I find them personally very interesting and entertaining. And as a result, both of the proposals were withdrawn, not because they didn't have merit, but because it was found that, it's a fine balance you need to strike in managing the final pool. Then there was one proposal on the IPv6 PI sub-assignment, which is in the final stages now, that also generated a lot of discussion. And it came down more or less to the principle of PI assignments for IPv6. So these have different terminologies in different regions, but there are certain policies for what we in the RIPE region call an allocation, which means you give a block of addresses to, for example, an ISP, and they can then use that to make further delegations, or what we call assignments, out of that. And then there's something called a PI assignment, which means it's an independent address block that an end user can get to, for example, multi-home. So this was an attempt to actually define sub-assignments out of PI. And this is now in the very final stages of the discussions. And then I thought I'd include another proposal. It wasn't a policy proposal, but it was a proposal more or less to look at a more of regular abuse contact validation. So in the RIPE database, where all the allocations and assignments are registered, there's also a field for abuse contacts. As the RIPE database and all the RIR databases are not only used for looking up IP addresses, but actually for troubleshooting or, for example, abuse contacts. So the proposal was for the RIPE NCC, the Regional Internet Registry, to regularly validate that address contact. And that was it from the RIPE region. Thank you.
Thank you, Noorani. And as Noorani said, all these policy discussions are very informative and very entertaining at times. So if you haven't attended any of the policy discussions, I would like to invite you to come to any of the RIR meetings, and it will be very interesting. So you're more than welcome. And so that's it for the policy update. If you have any questions, please, you can ask Ricardo Tara.
Actually, it's not a question, but I forgot to mention, and I think it's appropriate to mention, that every RIR has mailing list that it's open to everyone. They can join and watch part of these discussions and get more into the subjects being discussed.
Kevin here. I really enjoyed the IPv4 and IPv6 little statistics for each of the regions, how much policy is being worked on. And I sort of wonder, just seeing things, there's obviously a lot of who is policy going on and things like that. Is that IPv4 and IPv6, or is it other? I guess the question is, what do we define as other? The policy manuals deal with a lot of number-related things. It would be very hard for it not to be somehow touching V4 and V6 in the policy manuals. So I just thought it was interesting that the other in some regions was very significant, less so in other regions. And maybe I guess it's personal interpretation of what a person feels, but I just noticed that was an interesting little tidbit.
Yes, thank you for notifying that. And the thing is, when people talk about people from outside RIR communities, especially outside the number community, when they talk about the policies within the RIR, they only talk about V4, V6. And the idea was to show them, well, there are so much else happening other than V4 and V6. And so it's just not the V4, V6 we talk about and the ESN. There are other things as well. Louis.
Hi, Louis Lee. Then may I suggest that for next time, since who is such a significant portion, that we call that out as a category?
Definitely who is, because ICANN is also emphasizing on that as well, and probably, yeah.
Well, actually, you brought up the best one, FTAP. We are, ASNs are number are part of the numbers, and maybe ASN is also more than who is. ASN is actually a specific part of us.
Good. Very well noted. Thank you so much. Any other question, comment from anyone, from our colleagues or our audience? Members of the public fora? Thank you. Over to you, Paul.
Sorry? You'd like to hear me asking Carlos if he's got a clicker. Right. Do you mind if I borrow your clicker there, Carlos?
Yeah, he's testing.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, if it's not working, that's all right. I'll just say next or beep or something. Well, how many didn't see this presentation earlier today? How many didn't? Uh-huh. All right. Well, this is just for you then. Okay, this is an update from the NRO. It includes a few operational issues and also some stats, a condensed set of stats showing the status of our V4 and V6 activities. What is the NRO? We are the NRO is an informal group of the RARs, an unincorporated association formed by an MOU signed way back in 2003, the purposes of which were for coordination of RAR system and activities, promoting the multi-stakeholder model, and in particular bottom-up policy development, and also to fulfil the role of the ICANN ASO. We have a number of committees. We have an executive committee, which is the CEOs of the five RARs, with a rotating chair, and this year I'm it. Alan is vice chair and secretary, Axel is treasurer, Oscar and John don't have any special responsibilities this year. There's a secretariat currently hosted by APNIC and staffed by Herman and Susanna. Greetings. Susanna's left. And there are coordination groups, which are staff groups for coordinating communications, engineering, registration services, and also some other areas of coordination less formally on policy and finance and legal and public affairs. There's quite a number of publications on the website, including a regularly updated statistics presentation. There is a comparative policy overview, which has been a pretty important publication of ours, providing a matrix-style comparison between the policies on specific IP addressing and IP numbering-related policy issues comparatively across five RARs. For that matter, there's actually also a comparative view of RAR accountability available in the same area. So it talks in a similar way about the different measures or indicators of accountability and how they compare across five RARs. And the address supporting organisation is something that you can also find from the NRO, and you can work out all about the difference between the ASO and the NRO. The ASO primarily exists within ICANN as an arrangement between the NRO and ICANN for fulfilling that function of the ASO under the ICANN bylaws, which primarily includes assigning or appointing members to various ICANN committees, including the ICANN board, and passing global policy processes from the regional processes through into ICANN so that those policies can be ratified by ICANN board and then implemented, carried out by IANA come PTI. NRO finances, we have a proportional sharing policy for the finances, the costs of the NRO operations. We apportion responsibility according to a weighted formula of budget and total IPv4 holdings of the RARs, And when you munge that in a spreadsheet, you get the percentages which are there, which show our respective responsibilities for the NRO budget, which includes $500,000 or so on general operations and also an $823,000 and a year contribution to ICANN. That actually is split between some $600,000 for the PTI services and the remainder being a voluntary contribution, as we call it. Where are we? Thank you. That's probably better. We have a stability fund, which is a pledge of over $2.1 million, which is available in case of any financial need that might be required in the name of or to support the stability of the RIR system. The IANA Review Committee came to us out of the IANA transfer, the stewardship transfer, and it's the accountability mechanism by which we have a committee of people who assess IANA's implementation of global policies and make sure that their implementation of policies through those services is in line with the way those policies are intended to have been implemented. It's a little bit like the ASOAC, and it's got 15 members, three from each region, two of them elected, and one of them being a staff representative appointed to form that that committee and represent the operational RIR staff activities, I suppose. And there are archives and minutes online. The review committee has got 15 members that are listed there. The other thing that has come to us out of the IANA stewardship transition is the under the new bylaws, the empowered community is something that we participate in, of course, and there's a bunch of procedures which have been just about adopted. They will be finalised this week and published for various different empowered community actions, approval, rejection, director removal, and other empowered community activities are all sort of codified under a set of procedures. Okay, the ASO review. Well, the ASO was formed by a MOU with ICANN, as I mentioned, some 15 years ago. It had a review conducted in 2011. It's had a second review, which was completed last year. And so in August last year, we had a final report published of the ASO review. It's available, like everything else, on the NRO website. It had 18 recommendations, most of them fairly straightforward and easy to implement. The last one being number 18 was is a recommendation for a set of regional consultations among the RIR communities to deliberate on the future structure of the ASO. So the NROEC and the ASOAC have collectively approved and accepted the recommendations, all 18 of them. As I say, the 18th is one whose implementation kind of goes on, and it might go on for a year or two or more in the regional consultations, which have to come together on some agreement before they could result in any significant change or adjustment to the ASO structure. A few technical projects include the RPKI, so the Resource Public Key Infrastructure, as a set of services that we offer, some changes to the trust anchor arrangements that were implemented last year. We have participation in the ICANN ITHI, Identified Technology Health Indicators project. We had a consultation over that last year about what our community members in across the regions felt or whether they wanted to comment on the indicators, the metrics that were being proposed for identifier technology health indication in the numbers space. Okay, some statistics. I showed, this is just an extract of some of the statistics they've reported in full with the whole history of these reports on the NRO website. And in fact, these stats are being revamped at the moment, so sometime in the next in the next quarter or so of this year, we should be seeing a revamped set of these stats. But we have a division here, or a report here on the total division of the slash eights of the entire IPv4 address pool. As I said before, the RIR responsibility for funding the NRO is based partly on this proportionality of IPv4 holdings, and on, in addition, on the budgets. We're in what we call the exhaustion phase of IPv4 allocation in all of the regions. Most of us have some form of rationing, soft landing rationing policy in place, which has left us with an IPv4 supply which is being consumed quite slowly. The one outlier there is Arran, which doesn't have a which didn't have such a policy and has run out. When it ran out completely and quickly with their last allocations of V4. APNIC Labs, this is one of Jeff's charts, regular live chart that's published showing the run out in each of the five regions of the remaining IPv4 address pool. And it shows on current projections that those pools are all going to run out in the next 2 to 3 years, or even more quickly in case of AFRINIC there. IPv6, likewise, we can report on the proportionality of V6 allocations around the five different regional internet registries, something I've reported on also this morning for the interests of the ICANN board is the fact that if you look at the recent rate of IPv6 activity growth around the world, it's really growing very rapidly. The measure of end-user capability of IPv6 went up from 7.5% to 17% last year. Likewise, Google's chart of IPv6 volume is going rapidly upwards. So I think the point of this is not so much in reporting RIR activities as reminding the world that IPv6 is definitely on a growth path, and that's something that all the RIRs have been working to promote for quite some time now. Now, who would like to hear about ITHI? Jeff.
Actually,
I'm right,
but it's okay.
Oh. Boo-hoo. Okay. Identified technology health indication. Indicators is an acronym used by ICANN for a project that they have in determining what's the best way to measure the so-called health of different identifier technologies. They're working primarily on DNS-related identifiers. We offered, the RIRs collectively offered to plug into that by finding through community consultation what would be a meaningful set of indicators for the health of IP addresses and related internet number resources in terms of their registration health, if you like. So we participated in that through one of our coordination groups, the Registration Services Coordination Group. They drafted a document late 2016 which spoke about metrics, about risks and definitions, risks and consequences of those particular metrics. It was published in 2017. It was released for community consultation towards the end of last year, and we've completed that community consultation. We'll have an approved draft of that document in the near future, which represents what the numbers community has felt are the most important indicators of the health of the IP addressing identifier system, if you like. So the metrics that we have are defined, they're grouped into three different categories representing comprehensive, correct and current resource registrations, and those can be broken further down into a total of five different more specific metrics which have to do with the completeness of the record, the uniqueness of the records to avoid overlapping or clashing, the correctness of the records in terms of correspondence with official records, for instance, of companies that are represented in the database, the correctness of the services in terms of providing a functional, useful set of registration data, and then currency is also the need for that data to be regularly reviewed and updated as needed. So there is, again, more on the NRO website about ITHI. Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Okay.
So one small question is, so on ITHI, is so all RIRs have agreed to collaborate and with the ICANN measurements. So is it something? So I'm just trying to understand that all the RIRs are heavily already invested a lot in the measurement, which makes a lot of sense to the numbers community. So what else was needed out of this ITHI project to add something to the number side only? DNS is, okay, fine, that makes sense, which ICANN is doing, but why from the number side?
Well, the RIRs, they absolutely share and have always shared an interest in the correctness and the quality of our registry databases. So you could track through all of the RIRs over history a whole variety of different measures which have been taken in order to collect good data, to have that data corrected, to have it checked and corrected, to have through policy processes for the community to advance the sort of the policies which ensure the correctness and the quality of the data. But the five of us have really operated in a way which is in parallel and loosely coordinated and moving in the same direction. But we haven't actually ever sat down together and said, well, how would we actually collectively measure or express our sense of the quality of that data in a way that could be can be compared across RIRs and tracked consistently over time. So I guess we can give credit to ICANN for inspiring us to get together and do that work, and because so far it hadn't been done. So I think it was a useful thing to plug in also to something that potentially is. Provides a consistent set of measures or possibly terminology with other identifiers that are part of the ICANN system. So I think it's probably about global consistency of approach and ability to track consistently over time how our health or quality is improving.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
If no other question or comment, then I'll ask the same thing. Who attended the board meeting in the morning where I presented the... Okay, everybody was there. That's good. So I won't bore you with the same content. I'll just give you a quick backgrounder, which Paul covered mostly, that why there was a need for the review. It's part of the bylaws. Every supporting organization has to conduct an independent review by an independent entity. It was conducted by first one was in 2011, second was 2017. It took like 6 months to conduct that review. They reviewed the ICANN bylaws, ASO MOU, and our meeting minutes, NRO EC's meeting minutes, and multiple interviews with all the with existing board members, previous board members, existing ASO AC members, previous ASO AC members. By the way, report is already published. It was published last year, 2017 August. So the details are there. If you haven't read it, it's very interesting, very, very nice. Read 70 pages, odd pages, something. It's good. So in January, NROEC and ASOAC did the joint response of the review, and there were 18 recommendations. We agreed to implement those recommendations as suggested by Paul that it was pretty straightforward. The first 17 were very well defined, and they were very practical to implement. They can be implemented by changing some administrative work, doing some administrative changes in the procedures, some documentation. Of course, requires some update to the MOUs, and which will be reflected in the bylaws as well. That's why we requested the ICANN in the morning, ICANN board in the morning, for their support, and which, of course, they have provided. They will provide moving forward. The most important one is the recommendation 18, which I will talk about only. All the other recommendations are in this presentation, but if for the sake of record, but I'll move to recommendation 18. Right. So as I said, the first 17 were first 17 are very well defined, and they can be implemented through the changes in administrative procedures and documents. But 18 is a bit different. It says the NRO should initiate a public consultation involving the five RIR communities to determine the future structure of the ASO. So again, as part of the joint statement, we agreed that we will initiate the consultation within the RIR communities. And the first region was APNIC, where the consultation started last year in APNIC 44. And a result of that consultation, we formed a working group on the ASO review, and the task of the charter of the review is very, very specific. Very, the scope is very limited to review the recommendation 18 only. We had our first meeting. We had our first meeting for the working group in last APNIC. That was 45 in February in Kathmandu, Nepal, and. As a result of that meeting, the community supported the non-status quo option, which is also so. Three options were presented in the items review report. One was the status quo, don't change anything. Non-status quo, changing the and clarifying the role, and then the third one was. Little bit changing the structure in a two-house role. The community had a consensus on one thing, that in APNIC region we will support the non-status quo option and move forward on that. So that was the only thing came forward, and working group session is still open. If anybody is interested, they can join the working group mailing list and... they can share their views on the mailing list as well. We have some very active volunteers from the community who are working on the proposal and discussing things. You can join them. Aaron started the discussion in the Aaron community on a mailing list as well. As would you like to add something on that one?
Yeah, so Aaron's process has opened. A number of emails have gone out, and they've also extended it out beyond the April Aaron meeting to allow for discussion during the April members meeting as well. So there's been a little bit of discussion on the mailing list. Obviously, we'd love more, but it's also allowing for in-person discussion, and I believe they've said there will be a talk there first, and then community input.
Thank you. But just to give you an idea that when the report came out, it concluded one thing, that the core mission and administrative tasks for which the ASO was set up remain largely unchanged, and there is no pressing need for organizational reforms, but at the same time, it recommends a call for community-wide reconsideration of the role and function of the ASO within ICANN. So that was the conclusion from the report, and on the basis of that, we are consulting with the respective communities. And it's an ongoing process. It's going to take some time, of course. We cannot conclude in a few months. It has to happen in all the RIR region, and everybody has to agree on same principle that what is going to be moving forward. So hopefully by next year we should have something concrete to share with the concrete to share here. And of course, if you follow any of the RIR policy meetings or the discussion mailing list, you'll get more information. But this is what it is at the moment. On the recommendations, we have already updated. We have already released a joint statement 2 months back, so you can review that as well. So on the basis of these recommendations, if you have any questions, I'm probably as ASOAC, we can answer that. All good. It was okay. So, or I can go one by one and read the recommendations. What do you want? Well, all right, good. I can read all the recommendations. Anyway, so this is just a quick update on the recommendation that where we are, and we presented in the board meeting in the morning. So that was it from the review update side. So that's it.
Okay, no questions for AFTAP? Any other questions or contributions? Because that's the end of our agenda. Yeah, please. Yeah, come and sit. Sorry?
For the two people that are.
Yeah, yeah.
As I mentioned before, my name is Dan Dahlberg. I work at BitSight, and I noticed or heard you mention that you're obviously very much interested in the accuracy of the WHOIS information and the registrations, assignments, and allocations, thing like that. And that's actually something our company is very much interested in understanding as well, given the nature of our business, which I can explain now or after as well. But we do a lot of research in that area. We're particularly interested in also the accuracy of specific assignments, whether or not they're reassignments or allocations, especially when it comes to service providers and various other aspects like that. But I guess my question is also going to be, is there any particular group, individual, maybe it's here right now, where there's potential to collaborate or share information in terms of the research that we do at our company with?
Can you tell us more? What's the company?
So the company is BitSight Technologies. We're basically a security rating service. The easy way to explain it is similar to how the American credit ratings measure a individual's performance to manage debt. We measure a company's ability to follow security practices. But one thing that's a little bit different is we use public data. So we have a corpus of our malware threat intelligence, for example, that shows individual infected machines because of using technologies like syncalling and whatnot. And the other data set that we use actually describes what assets a company is responsible for. Mm-hmm. So the IP addresses and the domain names. And we can join these together to actually create security reports. Oh. And the target demographic of our product is third-party risk management, which has been significantly growing over time. So, in the process of doing that, we're working with our customers in terms of representing sort of how the an external person, external company, would view their resources on the internet in terms of their map, like the IP addresses that are in use particular to this conversation. And of course, oftentimes they often run into situations where they encounter stale records because of the former contracts from a service provider kind of left those registrations or reassignments in place within the Whois directory, and we've been working with them. So sort of anecdotally as well, if you happened for some reason received a higher number of companies reaching out to perhaps HIR indicating that they have stale assignments that might have been in part because of some of the effort on our behalf as well.
Well, I think all of the RIRs are interested in and I'm sure provide some mechanism for reporting incorrect data. We certainly do at APNIC, and I guess there's a mechanism somewhere to do that. So if it's a matter of a question of getting back to us with known problems, then I think we're all very interested in hearing about that and being able to act on reliable reports of problems. That'll be a different interface for each of the five RARs. On the REIT side, we have all deployed RDAP now as an API accessible, you know, API based mechanism for getting access to Whois data, which has enabled us to provide a single sort of unified and programmatic interface into the five different databases. So if you're doing programmatic access, then obviously that would be, I guess, the way to do it. But in each case, I guess the five RARs have got sort of different interfaces into the staffing folks who are looking after things internally. So I guess it depends on where you want to start, and you know, this is not a bad place to start. Okay.
All right. So I'm from the community in the Aran region. There's, as an example, and it's worth definitely checking each region's websites, because in the Aran region right now, as an example, we have an open consultation, which is not policy development, but consultation, related to the IRR, the Internet Routing Registry database that Aran currently has and what could be done there. And feedback from the community, especially, you know, with your skill set and your specific kind of skill set, would definitely be useful in shaping what the next IRR would look like within the region. And it's an open consultation right now. So just as an example, it's not just about sometimes pulling, but being able to give information in terms of the best practices that you would feel would be appropriate, things like that, would definitely maybe not benefit you today, but it might benefit you 6 or 12 months from now and the community as a whole.
Any other RIR folks have any remarks about this? Okay.
Cool.
Well, it's noted. Thank you. And let's exchange some business cards.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for that. Anything else? If not, then I think we can adjourn this session. Get ourselves ready for whatever the evening's entertainment is going to hold for us all. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for coming. Thank you, FTAP.
Thank you, everyone.